KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Our News In Depth guest today is Felicity Fenton, author of the book User Not Found from Portland's Future Tense Books. User Not Found is a long-form essay about Felicity's attempt to withdraw from the internet, especially social media platforms such as Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, which she refers to as walls in the book. But it's more than a screed against internet addiction and our inability to put down our phones. It's an examination of identity, what we gain and what we lose when we engage in social media, and who we are and what we become when we disengage. We're fortunate to have Felicity in the studio with us now to talk about User Not Found and what she found when she disengaged. Felicity, welcome to KBOO.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
Felicity, first a little background on you. Doing the research, I was amazed at the variety of work you do and the quality of drawing, painting, photography, conceptual art, of course, writing. And you have a show on our sister community radio station, Freeform Portland. How'd you ever find time for social media?
Oh, that's a good question. In the beginning, I used it as an art form, almost. I was sort of late in the game to social media, I guess, in the trajectory of it. I wasn't a part of Friendster. I was very, in a limited way, a part of MySpace, but I think I had.
Well, that goes back.
It goes way back. Yeah, it goes way back. But then somebody invited me to Facebook, and it was all over. I thought, oh, no, what is this? And so I used it as a platform to for writing, for and strange status updates and performances.
And maybe promoting your work. A lot of artists do that.
Yeah, there was an element of that. Not so much in the beginning, though. It became more promotional, self-promotional, probably over the last 4 years.
Now, early in the book, you write, quote, digital applause makes art seem less lonely. As an artist, what were you getting online that you weren't getting in real life?
I think instant gratification is a big one, and it's something that I think we all can relate to and have probably grown to really appreciate. I think there's also an element of engagement on social media where people feel more comfortable saying things, comments in the comments section, or maybe not saying anything at all, but just, you know, hitting that thumbs up or heart is a way to support as one can.
And sometimes they feel a little too comfortable saying things.
Oh, yes.
Social media.
Totally. I don't think I've never been trolled, thankfully.
Now, given the positives of social media, the digital applause, the sense of community, among other artists we just mentioned, you start the book with a negative experience, with a story of being unfriended, or as you put it, discovering that someone had erased me from their social walls. Did you take this as a rejection of your art, maybe of you personally?
I did. I have a big fear, and it's probably one of my biggest, you know, it's just like a fault of mine of disappointing others. And so I immediately took it to heart, and I thought, oh, what did I do? What did I possibly say online to upset this person? But I sort of knew this person offline as well. I met this person online, but then I knew this person in the flesh. So it was a really strange situation where I didn't even know where to begin. And I reached out and never heard from them. And so it's still a mystery to this day. I don't know. I think it's, you know, people just need to pare down their life. I don't actually take it personally anymore. I think you get to a point where you're so inundated with people online and even offline, and the obligations run really high, and so I understand where people might need to just cut ties.
Was this experience, Felicity, partly at least, something that led to your experiment to disengage from social media, and
yes,
and consequently, of course, resulted in the book?
Yeah. So there were a few other reasons. That was one of them, but it was probably not the primary reason. The primary reason was just on my travels over the last few years, I noticed how many humans were on their phones using the same interfaces, having the same sort of body experience. So lots of schlumping over the screens and scrolling, and it just seemed to me that the world was becoming one of just a monoculture. And so that was a bit scary to me. All the privacy stuff is a bit intrusive and frightening in terms of what they're doing with our data. And then witnessing my daughter and her just considering what it was that she was seeing me, her parent, and others who were older than her do.
You mentioned a remark about her parents. Early in the book about your face is always illuminated by the light from your screens.
Yeah, we were in Mexico City, and vacations are a really great opportunity to take a lot of photographs. And I was at the point where I was taking a lot of photographs and I was posting them on the walls. And it was a habit of getting up in the morning and checking. And she stated, "It's really strange for me to see my parents' faces always painted in light." And so that was the day I cut ties for a few months and started to log my response to that.
And we mentioned in the intro that you refer, and you just did, in fact, to the internet platforms such as Facebook, Twitter, Instagram as walls. My understanding, besides the obvious Facebook reference writing on someone's wall, is that just as physical walls, the internet provides a certain amount of separation and protection in our social relationships, but also cuts us off from deeper engagement. But the cool part about doing these interviews is I get to ask you, the author, why'd you choose that term, walls?
Well, I mean, it is just that. It's a barrier, and it's something that you can't really break through it. We really rely very heavily on physical engagement as humans, as critters do the same thing. Eye contact, being in the same room and smelling somebody is so much. It's really important to communication and being a society, as a community.
And of course, you can't smell anybody on the internet.
No, I haven't succeeded in smelling anybody on the internet.
That's coming, I'm sure.
I don't know. I think I've heard this before. I've had conversations around smells and whether or not they can come out of the internet. But I don't know. Didn't they have smell-o-vision at one point?
Yeah, I guess it never took off. Yeah, and then of course, there's scratch and sniff, ads with kind of reeking of cologne in your favorite magazine.
Yeah, so. Or McDonald's, like, scratch this. It smells like our french fries, and you'll just
it doesn't make me long for those french fries. But now, when you decided to disengage from the walls, you went cold turkey, right? Was your initial idea then to go for a certain amount of time?
I didn't have a timeline. I've done a lot of durational things in the past, and I gave myself a timeline. I spent a month one April writing down every single URL I visited that day. And it was time consuming.
Oh, actually writing down handwritten.
The URL. Uh-huh. And it was just to see where I was going. So I've had this relationship to the internet for quite a while. Some of my former work was about the internet. And but this situation was more of, ooh, I think I have a problem. So I'm going to just let it go for a while and write about it.
That was the entire internet, so it wasn't just the social media platforms. It was you didn't Google anything, or
no. So this and User Not Found, it was mostly just the walls. Mm-hmm. Just the walls, meaning Facebook.
Oh,
and
okay,
Instagram.
Those platforms.
And I wasn't ever good at Twitter. I'm still not good at Twitter. but the former project was called Internal Server Error, and it was a show. It was an installation at the former gallery called Place, that was in Pioneer Place Mall on the top floor.
Oh,
so that was a different experiment in disengaging or observing my own actions on the internet.
No. Let's talk a little about the disengagement. You find a positive in something most of us try to avoid: boredom. And you write early in the book, oh, how nice it is to feel you again. You're talking about boredom, or addressing boredom. You come in gusts, late afternoon, mid-mornings, at stoplights, standing in lines. How daunting it was to feel you at first, your excruciating nothingness. How did you grow to enjoy boredom? Something, again, most of us do try to avoid.
Yeah, I guess my my peak addiction on the walls was probably the last, you know, I'd say 3 years before this book. I was spending time in lines, waiting in line, and I would just be scrolling. wherever I was in traffic, I'd be scrolling, and just on the corner, I'd be scrolling, I'd be standing in my kitchen scrolling. And I think I realized, oh, I don't feel the need to scroll, and I can just look around and see what other people are doing. I can take in the lights, I can take in the sunset, I can smell the flowers, all that stuff. Is so mundane. I mean, not the flower part. Flowers are far from mundane.
I have a quote for you then, because we talked a little earlier before we went on the air that you have a radio show on Freeform Portland. It's called Bachelard's Panty Drawer, after the French philosopher Gaston Bachelard. Mm-hmm. So I dug up a quote from him, and he said, "Reverie is not a mind vacuum. It's rather the gift of an hour which knows the plenitude of the soul."
Ah, that's beautiful.
I think you pretty much just said the same thing, though, in terms of
different vocabulary.
Not scrolling. Of course, he probably said it in French too. So. but not scrolling, and then noticing all these things around you. In other words, it was a very positive and constructive reverie. I almost wonder, do you think that's a necessary part of art, of creating art, is to feel that kind of boredom? Where you're not engaged with a screen 24 hours a day or the majority of a day?
I don't know if it's just art. I think it's about presence and really absorbing your space. So not only your body, but your environment, being present with the people you're sitting across the room from. So I think it's something that, yeah, it's important as an artist for sure, because I think it's important in general to just pay as much attention as you can. Because you learn a lot when you pay attention.
And you had another part in the book I'd like to read, just this. It's actually an excerpt from the section, but you talked about the pre-internet world, so where reveries were more common, apparently. And I quote from the book, "We walked through Brooklyn in bare feet. We drank bodega beer and bantered about new bands and rancorous poets. We sipped coffee while scribbling notes on paper. We wrote letters on word processors. We exchanged mixed cassette tapes. We listened to records from start to finish." I wonder, what have we lost, or more to the point, what has the internet taken from us?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's subjective, too, because I think some people feel really fulfilled by the internet and have a different experience than I do. But I know that I've had to relearn how to do a lot of those things that you just listed in that passage. And I happen to really enjoy tactile things. I enjoy the drop of a needle onto a record, that crackle. I really like hearing what a musician does from start to finish, and maybe what their intent was in an album. I don't know if musicians even have that intent anymore. There's also been conversations about that I've had.
No, because people consume music a song at a time. It's Spotify or Pandora, where there used to be concept albums. You listened from start to finish. I'm dating myself, but there were LPs where you had to actually go and turn over the record, but you had a complete experience. And it seems that that's somewhat been taken away from us. People don't really have that attention span, maybe because of social media and the internet.
For sure. I noticed, I still have my phone in my bag a large part of the time, but the thing that I am mostly drawn towards is checking my email and checking text messages. And so that's something I'm working on. But I noticed when I went cold turkey with the walls, from the walls, I definitely felt my attention span coming back. It was, I could read sentences without rereading very complex passages from essays. I didn't have to furrow my brow so much, or, you know, it just wasn't as fatigued. I didn't get as fatigued. So it's probably a combination of my eyes not being as tired from all the screens.
Did that affect your art as well, in addition to your attention span?
Well, I don't know. I'd say that maybe there's more focus. I think so. Maybe there's more focus.
Now, of course, from what you just said, you're back on the internet, but somewhat more limited. In fact, you even posted about this interview on Facebook this morning where I saw it. After the writing of User Not Found, do you find yourself using it more selectively?
Very selectively. And I feel really conflicted about my use because it's... There's the self-congratulatory aspect of it that I'm wary of. I just had something published in the Iowa Review, and they persuaded me with a sheet of paper that came with the book to post this and to share. And I realize that there are certain presses and certain small, you know, nonprofits that would benefit from the people who they've taken on to post about whatever it is they're doing with them. So I feel a little bit of responsibility to do that. But at the same time, I'm wrestling with it because I don't really want to be there. And I think the reasoning behind me being there is still probably tethering on ego.
Well, I know other artists and writers who feel the same way, but it's very difficult to promote your work now without social media, unfortunately.
Yeah.
My favorite writer of all time is Thomas Pynchon, who's known for kind of disappearing from public view. Of course, he started about 50 years ago. He's able to get away with it, but I don't think any writer can do that now.
There are a few. So Mary Ruffel, she's a pretty well-known Luddite. Otessa Moshfeh, she doesn't use the walls.
I guess I should mention also I've interviewed him several times. So William Volman, purposely, he doesn't own even credit cards. He's totally off the grid.
Good for him. Yeah. If you can do it. And I think once you reach a certain caliber, people can do it for you. And you don't even potentially know. You just know that, I'm getting paid sometimes.
Well, Felicity Fenton, User Not Found is so beautifully written, filled with great lines, and I would say great wisdom. Thanks so much for coming into KBOO.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
We've been talking with Felicity Fenton, author of the book User Not Found, from Portland's Future Tense Books. For more information on Felicity and her work, you can go to her website, felicityfenton.com, and for information on how to purchase User Not Found, print or even ebook, you can go to futuretensebooks.com. And to paraphrase Felicity, when you're done listening to this newscast, go outside. Good things happen outside. This is Ken Jones for KBOO's News in Depth.